Welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, where we aim to give swimming the coverage and publicity it deserves. Every week, we celebrate the sport we love with amazing special guests and topics from around the swimming pool. And now, here are your hosts, Scott and Dan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott, and back with me this week is Dan, and we have another very special guest with us. Joining us on this week's podcast is Jamie Main, head coach of Davencio XL over in Sheffield. How are you doing, Jamie? Welcome to the podcast.
I'm good. I'm going to correct you. We're in Derby.
Derby, okay.
Yeah, we're based in Derby. Yeah, yeah. Not far from Sheffield, but I did see that and I was like, oh. We have trained at Sheffield a couple of times, but
I think it's because both me and Dan have competed at the Davencio XL Level 1 meet, which is Ponds Forge every year.
Yeah, we have those. We have our meets at Ponds, so it's the closest 50 meter pool with a swim down. So that's why we go up there, and it's sort of Derbyshire is quite a long county, so we do have members from further north in the county, which is they're literally like 15 minutes from Ponds Forge. So we have had stuff. Training wise up there, but predominantly based Derby. Around Derby. Yeah.
So how does Davencio XL kind of work as a club? Because I know it's quite an umbrella club for the whole kind of county?
Yeah, so it was based on the Nova model. Just a bit of background. So I grew up in Nottingham. I still live in Nottingham, which is literally 15 miles down the road from Derby.
Great city.
Yeah, swam.
I went to uni there.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was always going to bring that up, wasn't he? Always.
Yeah, I love Nottingham. It's a great place.
It is a great city. Yeah, and that's why I haven't moved too far, really. So I grew up in a home club at Bramcote and then moved quite quickly to Nova as the county squad and ended up on the top group with Bill Furness and swam there till I was about 17, and then I went back and volunteer coached at my home club. Bill found out that I was doing a bit of coaching and invited me to come and help at Nova, and then that it was a bit strange because I was coaching guys on the top group when I was helping out. I was coaching guys I swam with, which was interesting, but they did give me a lot of time and respect. So I was working with like Olympians and international guys from day one. And that was, I was only 20 at the time. And
straight in the deep end.
Yeah, no, but it was great. It was a great sort of apprenticeship. And I coached under Bill until he retired from Nova after London. So 12 years just over. He helped out for a year until he got the head coach job at British Swimming. So he was still coming 5-6 times a week, and that was a nice transition over. And I head coached that for 2 years, and then I decided to have a little career break just for personal reasons. And then DX came hunting because I was keen to get back in after my year break, and been there for this is my sixth season at DX. But the two models are quite closely related, both county squad setups, so there's a lot of smaller clubs. Not in terms of membership, because there's some decent sized clubs, but in terms of water time and space. So the coach ratios are a lot better at Nova and DX compared to sort of home clubs, feeder clubs. And it's like the sort of pinnacle of that pathway triangle, I guess.
Yeah.
So it was quite familiar to me, the setup. Obviously, I've been at Nova for 14 years as a coach and several years as a swimmer to almost come straight in and know what the setup was about and how the relationships works within that setup in terms of working with home clubs and coaches and feeding kids through at the right time to suit their development and making sure that we do right by those kids at the sort of top end of those county pathways.
So you're doing a great job at Davencio, and there's some incredible British talent coming from there. What is the secret to your success as a team?
Thank you.
Big question. Straight away.
So, I mean, the X is always produced. So even going back to when it was first set up under Mark Rose, who's now at Manchester, and then Andy Manley, who's now director of swimming at Loughborough. Yeah. They've always produced really good age group youth swimmers who have then gone on. Like, you just have to look at the alumni who are now at the National Centre, people like Abby Wood, Sarah Vasey, Molly Renshaw. Some real big hitters who have come through DX. So it was already a successful program. I think the things we've had to deal with in the last 6 years is more around sort of the adversity. So we've lost our main pool. We've had to go out of county. We've had to sort of scrap around pool time, be really creative. And I would say that's born a sort of culture of togetherness, backs to the wall mentality. And during that troubled time where we're having to travel a lot more to pools and a lot of sort of hurdles around sort of logistics, I guess, we didn't lose a member, which sort of says...
Okay, that's good.
We've got it right. Yeah. And it's a constant reinforcement of that. Like, I'm a big believer in not only sort of my attitude being right and that reflected onto the swimmers, but also the leaders in the pool. So we have some really good sort of attitude and culture champions in the pool, in the training environment. And they're not like loud, but their actions are really, really positive and performance orientated. So, you know, their actions lead the way, I would say. People like Jacob and Mia, Jacob Whittle and Mia Slevin, but also guys who aren't at that international level have really good standards in what they do day to day.
Yeah, are you finding kind of that important team morale and kind of culture is driving on the individual results as a swimmer? Are they celebrating the individual results as a team, basically?
Yeah. They're really good at that. Like the community, I always moan about their communication, but that's generally to me.
That's teenagers, isn't it?
Yeah, it's teenagers. But their communication with each other is really strong, and they're not good supporters, whether that's the people we've spoken about on the international level or at recent trials we've just had a couple of weeks ago. But
yeah,
but even so the day-to-day communication and the positive messages they give out amongst each other, there's a real, real good vibe there.
Awesome. I mean, you must be so proud of both Mia and Jacob. They both sound amazing at trials. What were your thoughts on trials as a whole?
I think obviously the trials was aimed at people who had been part of the elite returns training setup. So Jacob, because he's on a funded program for UK Sport and British Swimming, he got access halfway through the first lockdown. So he was back in with those funded guys at the national centres right from May. He hasn't had any interruptions. You could see that in the results. Mia, slightly different. She's on England performance program. So she didn't get any access in the first lockdown. So she had to be really, really creative in terms of what could she gain out of that period. And that's probably a podcast in itself, just her development over the last year. She was fortunate that they started to look at that in the second lockdown. So she got a bit of access at the back end of November. And then through this recent lockdown period, she was able to access, but that was difficult because her pool she could get in was in Northampton and she lives in Derby, which is an hour and a half away. So she was packing up her little VW up with a suitcase full of dumbbells and pull-up bar, a mini fridge and a clothes, and she was staying in a hotel Monday night through to Saturday morning on her own at 17. She only passed a driver's test for Christmas. So that just shows like the commitment that our guys have got. Like she's done exceptionally well considering in the last year she missed four and a half months worth of pool work.
Was she kind of in the pool by herself down at Northampton, or were you in constant communications with her? Or was it self-motivation?
She's gained a lot of self-drive. She's the first to admit that, and gained a lot of independence in the last year. But we'd be on FaceTime every day. I'd be sending her sessions. We'd be debriefing those sessions when she get back to the hotel at night. What do we need to tweak? And fortunately, after the second Manchester meet, the British Invitational, because things were getting a lot better in terms of COVID figures, and there was deemed to be slightly less risk, I was able to go in a couple of times a week to work with her, and that was that was nice in the lead up to trials. So when you're in a taper, you sometimes have to make coaching decisions there and then, and that really helped that process. With Jacob, because he's been in the whole time, I was drafted into the centre in January to work with him and the other national centre swimmers, which was great, which gave them a lot more attention leading up to trials. And I think that worked really well, working with Mel Marshall. Mm-hmm. And as I say, really giving those guys a little bit more input, help their sort of journey through that period.
Yeah, I guess that's one positive that's come from COVID, is that these younger athletes who are right on the cusp of the elite level, they've now been almost forced into that really professional mindset if they've wanted to succeed in the sport. It's kind of, it's not weaned out the weak, but it's certainly set a really, really, really good foundation for these swimmers, especially looking forward to kind of Paris. If we look past Tokyo, the next generation of British swimmers could be the best yet, considering what they've had to go through.
I agree. Although, the you know, and don't get me wrong, they were extremely grateful they could get in, whether it was Jacob in the first lockdown and the cohort he was in, or Mia in back end of November, and there was another group that managed to get in early February, back end of January, the England junior squad were getting in a little bit. But they were so grateful for that opportunity. And but I agree, it's definitely made this generation a lot more resilient, a lot more appreciative of their sport, because they've had it taken away from them at various degrees, but they've all lost something. And I think the way they've developed as people will set them up down the line, not only just in the sport, but in their life beyond the sport, I think.
Yeah, I think the worry out of COVID is that suddenly will almost there be a massive dropout from swimming. But actually, it could very much be the opposite effect, that these older swimmers have a bigger appreciation. Maybe they go on to masters, even if they don't get onto that elite level. They want to stay engaged in a sport because they've been forced to have time away from the pool. It's going to be a really interesting next few years to see what happens with the sport.
Yeah, I agree. I'm hopeful of that in terms of people gaining that appreciation and continuing. I think that maybe we're going to lose some of the younger kids, because especially if they're multi-sport, because they've been allowed to get back in sports outdoors, and swimming's obviously a little bit behind that, but I do hope that we retain some degree of participation at club level and clubs survive, because I still think there's some challenges ahead in terms of how club setups are going to be funded, especially over the next 12 months. And it's important that we all try and work together to keep this going and come out of this strong as we can, really.
Well, there's been fantastic COVID measures at the both Manchester meets and, of course, trials as well. And we were talking about it, especially with the women's 100 breaststroke, with Sarah Vasey and Imogen Clark having to stay in a hotel for pretty much 4 or 5 days before they get the chance to race. So I was going to quickly mention that actually Mia must have been half used to that, having that sort of situation going.
Yeah, she did a remarkable job, and I've got loads of stuff I can put into a presentation and around her development, as I say. But yeah, she was fine in those environments. She found things to keep herself busy, and Sarah, because obviously I've been working with that group, she Mel did a really good job with her of setting up things to keep her occupied. And she was really buoyant when she was coming down for her sessions at trials. Sarah was really positive around everything she was doing, and again, I think just an example of being grateful that we had the opportunity to do a trials, because you know, there's a lot of work and a lot of credit needs to go to British Swimming just to be able to get those trials on. You know, and it's different to Manchester because you're dealing with local councils. So Manchester, you know, that they had slightly different views on protocols to London, and London, where the position of the pool is, it's obviously connected to pretty much the Stratford Westfield, which is extremely busy. So there's considerations around crowds of people and all sorts of things on top of Manchester, and a different level of risk, I guess. But I think British Swimming, a lot of credit has to go to the leadership group, you know, Chris Spice and Tim Jones and Matt Ashman, who heads up the sort of medicine, sports science side of things, to make sure that it was a safely run trials.
Yeah, it was really good to see, kind of, especially some of the times coming out of trials. It was crazy. I don't think any of us expected to see such fast times all around the park, considering the disruption that swimming's had. If we kind of touch on Jacob Whittle's performances a little bit, because there were some outstanding swims across the park, and I think myself and Dan, we thought they were coming from Manchester. Even in the 50 freestyle, he dropped by 0.5, which is massive in a 50 free. Yeah. Did you guys as a team kind of expect such a good meet at just 16 years old?
I'd seen stuff in training, particularly from New Year. We're really fortunate that we could access the National Centre and work in that environment. He'd done things where I thought he'd go 48 high. It was just whether, you know, he could put himself in consideration for the summer and what that might look like. He'd done some impressive stuff in training, and I thought he could do that on the 100. The 50, like you said, is a little bit of a surprise. The thing is with Jay, like, he's a very rangy swimmer. His distance per stroke is exceptional, and I think on the 50 sometimes he can wheel spin a little bit, and it's almost like he has to go at 95% and he swims quicker because he just holds the water so well.
Did he go into that 50 with a little bit less pressure on his shoulders then, maybe?
Yeah, I think so, and we just said, look, just find a rhythm, even though it's 20 seconds, like, if he can find a rhythm and feel like he's gripping the water, he'll swim faster. And so he managed to do that. And then he backed it up in the final. It was a different feel in the final because he was next to Ben, who was just really so far ahead of everyone. And he got a little bit of wash, but he managed to do a very similar swim. So, yeah, the 50 was a bonus, to be honest. He just found that optimum stroke rate that enabled him to keep hold of the water. The 100, I thought he could do that. I think he surprised himself a little bit in terms of the outcome and the time. He got a little bit excited in the heats and got into a dogfight. But when he swims it to his strengths, he swims really fast because he's so smooth down the first 50 naturally, and then he turns and comes back. It's a bit like a Kyle Chalmers type of feel to that 100 with him.
We've got a few kind of young freestylers who are almost copying the Aussie 100 freestyle. I know Matt Richards is very much the same. The second Matt, 50 is looking really strong.
I quite like swimming it like that. I mean, I coached a lady to the Beijing Games, Jess Sylvester. She was in my sprint group at Nova back in the day, and she swam it the same way. It was quite funny. Jess messaged me after the final and said, Jay, seventh for the turn sounds familiar. So, like, that's the way.
No panic.
No panic. Stay relaxed, turn and go. And I think Jay swam it really, really well. And our aim was always to be the strongest in the last 15, and he was. And credit to him. He stuck to his race plan and got his reward.
I was going to say, do you feel a little bit of pressure coaching Jacob? Because as far as we know, he's the fastest ever 16-year-old over 100 meters. Is there sort of a bit of pressure, or do you feel excitement similar to like what we do?
No, I mean, he is 16, but he's a very down-to-earth guy. Like, he's quite mature and grounded. And I think, at the end of the day, the way my philosophy is, like, we're trying to add value to young people. And if we do that and they swim fast, great. He doesn't feel the pressure, and I certainly don't. We just do what we do, and if we get some nice outcomes off the back of it, then fantastic. And more importantly, you know, can we inspire some more young people to come through? That's the most important thing.
Yeah, no pressure. It's an enjoyment to watch swimming that good.
Yeah. And he does stuff day to day, and you just, you know, you do stand back and go, that's pretty impressive, that. And he's got some nice physical assets. Like, he's tall, he's 6'5", he's massive hands and feet. But a real credit as well to, like, the coaches that he was with before he came into my group. I mean, you know, going back, Jack Chambers, who heads up our national sort of age to youth program, did a fantastic job sort of ironing out the scrappiness, I would say. And he's still working on that. He's still working on that now. And I don't think he ever stopped working on the sort of technical aspects of the sport. And then back in his home club, Glenn Fisher was fantastic. And Glenn still has a big influence over him now. And they're more good friends now than anything. And a lot of credit needs to go to Glenn and Jack, I would say, for his early development.
So when a swimmer of this kind of talent comes into Daventio as a club, how much sort of transition period do you have between their former club and yourself? And do they carry on training with their old club at the same time, but you're giving them age group sets? Is that how it works?
So we've had a little bit of a transition as a program since Jay came in. He came into DX pretty much the same time I came in as a head coach. So
We've
both been within a few weeks of each other. So he came in just before his 11th birthday in the September, and that's when I joined as head coach. And he was doing two sessions a week with us, and then probably three with his home club and Glenn. And then that transitions over. We had a part-time group then. We don't have one currently. Although we do transition kids gradually. So they'll probably come in a few sessions, and then it gradually moves over a sort of 2 to 4 month period. So they're coming in full time. Jay was in that part-time group probably for 6 months. And then we moved him in full time. And he was with Jack from May time. That would be 2016. He's with Jack for just over 2 years. So 2018, September, we started to transition him into my group. We did that twice a week. And then in the school holidays, October half term, he came in for the full week. And then after that, he was in four times a week. And then at Christmas, he moved up full time. So we transitioned him from the age group program into the senior group. He was fast enough in the summer. We just felt from a social, psychological and technical point of view, it was better to move him that way, just because I felt like Jack hadn't quite ironed out a few things he was working on. He was much younger than the cohort I had. So there needed to be a sort of bedding in period with that. And we had some really good guys. Like, we had Ryan Reeder. I don't know if you know Ryan. Like, he was a open water guy, national medalist open water, very close to sort of GB selections. He was our captain then and did a great job of putting his arm around Ryan when he first around Jacob when he first moved up. And we went on a camp, I remember, to Dubai, and he was... He was finding his feet with lots of banter and things like that then. And then, like, he went, where did he go in Dubai? 52-0. He was only 14 then. And then he went 50.4 at trials, 50.37, I think it was, and qualified for European Junior. So
it's not that bad.
Yeah, he was only 14 then. And then, obviously, he was the first 14-year-old to break 50. So he went 49.9 at juniors. And then it's just developed since then, really.
It's interesting because it almost, from someone who's never been in a setup where it's got that umbrella club, the umbrella club to me actually sounds like a normal club. It doesn't sound kind of this elitist squad. It does sound like your traditional club feeding through.
It's
interesting.
Well, I think that's the best way to look at it. And those models work well when it's almost like they sit at the top couple of groups of a club. And I think we have a very family orientated feel, even though we've got some high performance guys in there, and it is the top end of that. At the end of the day, we're all just people, and I think it's important that the kids and the coaches and the staff have good values, and we try and project that through. And it's definitely not elitist, what people would perceive as elitist.
Yeah, I think it's the clubs that I know me and Dan have been involved in. It's almost, I'm not sure I could see it happen, because some of the coaches wouldn't like to share their swimmers and check their egos at the door, if that makes sense. They like that swimmer to be associated to their club and their one name. It's refreshing to hear from someone who hasn't been in it, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it has its challenges. I mean, you do come across those types of characters at times, with some home coaches, sort of hanging on to swimmers, I guess. But it's just about trying to build that trust with them. And we always try and recognize where the kids have come from. I've mentioned Glenn when he was at Ripley, looking after Jacob as a really young age grouper. And we try and do that with the successes that the swimmers having at DX. We always try and recognize the journey they've been on to get there.
Yeah, it's like when Abby Wood was on the heat sheets at Manchester. It's not down as Loughborough or DaVenture. It's down as Buxton, isn't it? It's connecting back to her kind of first time club. Stuff like that.
And all those kids. Abby was at Buxton. Molly Renshaw was Ripley, the same as Jacob. Mia is Etwell Eagles, a small club in the south of Derbyshire. So it's important that they're recognised for their work in the communities that they serve. Definitely,
It must be all to do with communication, really. Because really, we should all be targeting one thing about trying to get the summer to be at the best that they can be. Where, and like Scott alluded to it, that the coach's ego. And I think there are some coaches that just want to have a summer to swim for them, and it kind of makes them look good rather than trying to get the summer to be the best that he can be. So I appreciate that model. I actually really like it. And it's obviously working for Jacob.
Definitely. Communication is key, and we all fall down on communication at times. I hold my hands up sometimes. You know, you're getting so distracted in certain areas, especially at busy times, that things do slip. But I'm the first to hold my hands up and say, you know, sorry about that, we'll try and do better. And I try not to sort of gloss over things when they're not so great. I'll try and learn from it and do better next time. And we say that to the swimmers as well. It's okay to make a mistake and fail as long as you learn. But you're right, and I hope that we do that as well as we can at DX and in Derbyshire as much as possible.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to learn that DaVenture model. But if we kind of touch on your own kind of coaching philosophy, obviously, or your coaching career, coaching is always a very selfless job. You're never the one overly in the spotlight for the success of your swimmers. So for yourself as a coach, how would you measure success on your career?
Deep question, that one.
It is.
I think I've had a few conversations with a really good coaching buddy of mine, Mike Glossop. He was at Bassett Law. I don't know if you come across Mike. He was a really bright guy, and we talk about things like this. We get in some deep conversations, but I think it comes down to is a word that's banded around quite a bit called legacy. But it is maybe not what you think of. So mine is not like, I don't want a plaque on the pool or anything like that. For me, if I finish and and you've managed to create a legacy with as many people as you can. That's most important. If you say, he helped me do this, or he helped me be a better person, I'm doing the career I want because of the values installed and the good behaviors installed by this guy, then I think I've done a good thing. It's not necessarily, you know, if Jacob goes on and wins an Olympic medal down the line, or, you know, Mia goes on and represents her country at a senior level, that's fantastic, but that's only going to be a small part of their life. For me, have they become the best people they can because of the time we had working together and that played a part, then for me, that's a success and I've done a decent job.
What would you say is the most important thing you've learned over your coaching career from the 14 years at Nova and the 6-7 years at DX?
Another piece of advice to pass on to like a young coach who's just starting out their career.
Never be afraid to ask a question. Like, even if you think it's stupid, like, just ask it. Most coaches, no matter how long they've been in the game, want to share. I've found that's been quite good. Always ask questions. There's no golden rule. I nicked that off. What's his name? I guess you guys listen to the performance podcast with Jake Humphries and that. The Timo Wolf one. Like he said, like, there's no golden rule to high performance, and there isn't. Just be really open and honest with your athletes, the people you work with, and don't be afraid to ask questions. And if you don't know something, say you don't know it, but you'll do what you can to find out. I think that's a good way to look at it. You're always going to work more hours than you think.
Behind the scenes, life, isn't it?
But yeah, like, if you're going to be successful, you got to do more. That's just part of it. And I would say the attitude of your program and your swimmers and the people within it reflect your leadership. So, you know, if you're working hard, if you're seen to be going out your way and living by the values that you hold, then I don't think you'll go far wrong.
Brilliant.
If you were to go back over your career and change one, maybe two things, would there be anything that you would change?
Oh, gosh.
Again, it kind of comes under the advice thing for new coaches coming up, I suppose.
I don't think there's anything I'd change, like, because I wouldn't be where I am if I had done it.
That's true, yeah.
So my career is, I'd got my dream job, you know, when I was at Nova, and it was my boyhood program, and I had a great apprenticeship under Bill. Like, to work every day with someone like that, you do learn a lot, and it opened a lot of doors. Now, I had to press those opportunities. I was like, have you got so-and-so's number? Have you got their email? And I used him as a real, and I still use him as a resource. He's a good friend. So, change, gosh. I think it's funny, like, as a young coach, you want everything to be perfect. And actually, I think learning this lesson probably over the last 10 years is that actually it's the imperfections that make it great. Because you as a coach, you're constantly looking for solutions. And that, I think that's when you're best, when you're trying to be creative and find little successes in those solutions. Don't get frustrated by things when they don't work. Just keep going and keep going. And you'd encourage your athlete, your swimmers, to do that. So why shouldn't you be doing that as a coach?
Definitely. Wise words. Yeah.
So I think that's just about kind of rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I've really enjoyed learning about the structure of DaVentio as a club and the way that that setup works, especially for swimmers who are potentially going to be involved in it, or for parents looking from the outside inwards. It's kind of good to see kind of the honest attitude behind it. I think that's how I'd put it, rather than it trying to hoard these really good swimmers. All it's trying to do is push on swimming for that region as a whole.
That's the aim.
I feel like your philosophy is correct. It's all about group cohesion, morale, keeping everyone together, because and swimming, like you say, is a short-term goal, if you like, but actually the life lessons you learn from it, it just expands further into the working world and personal life as well. I think it's great what you do.
I tell you what, I'd love to speak to some of your kind of former alum of Nova or DaVincio. So say the ones who are now at the elite training programs and understand how it set them up for that stage of their career. Because usually that transition from youth swimmer to elite open swimmer is quite tough. It's quite hard to make that jump. And there's several countries around the world that really struggle to make that transition. So I'd wonder if any of your alum have found that the DaVincio model has really set them up for the professional side of the sport.
Well, I think if you look at people like, I mean, this was before my time, they moved on, and Abby and Sarah were the last ones just before I came in, actually. I think Abby would be really interesting to talk to because her transition has been probably what you'd say is typical, although it's been quite challenging. So she's sort of broken into teams, gone away on meets, probably in her own head, didn't quite hit her performances that she'd have wanted. Oh. But then we've seen in the last 12 months her really come to the fore with the ISL, and then obviously in the long course performances she's hit since New Year. But I think that's typical. It takes 5 or 6 years to make that transition from a world-class junior, and Abby won European Juniors 400 IM. Mm. So she's been classed in that bracket, to become someone who is at the top end of senior swimming at an international level. It takes 5 or 6 years. And I think all the research the British swimmers have done in the last few years shows that with their medal winners at junior level, it takes on average 5 or 6 years. And that time is tricky. It's really challenging because you're so used to success, relative success, and you're almost starting again. You're trying to break in, you're trying to break into teams, you're trying to then break into international finals and potentially challenge for medals. And you know, you don't quite often, the guys who are doing well at a top end junior level aren't there at 11, 12, but they are there when they get to 17, 18. So why shouldn't it be the same at a senior level? When you're breaking in it into the senior ranks at 18, why isn't it? Why don't we say, you know, you've got 5 or 6 years rather than it be, you know, a 2 to 3 year gig? It's going to be double that, really.
Yeah, I think we spoke to Abby Wood during ISL, and she was kind of bouncing that she had had that breakout. She had kind of, the work had been done, and she found a meet that really worked for her. Kind of that quick fire nature got her out of her own head.
Yeah.
And it was so good for her.
Yeah, and I remember, I mean, obviously I didn't coach at the time, but I remember Abby when she was with Andy Manley and Kim Hill, who's one a big part of her age group development. She was a back-to-back swimmer. She was British junior record holder on 200 breaststroke. She was great 400 IM. She could do 800. She could do any, and she used to see her at meets. She'd be literally out of one, you know, barely have time to get in a swim down into the next race. And so the ISL is literally the senior version of that, isn't it? You're literally out one into another. There's not a lot of time to overthink it. And I'm so happy for Abby. She's such a nice lady and works her absolute backside off. Like, and she's persevered through some times that were really tough for her in terms of breaking into those senior ranks. So I couldn't be happier for Abs. She's such a great person. And a fierce, fierce trainer and competitor, definitely.
Yeah, Scott was thinking that she's actually got a good chance of getting on the podium come Tokyo for the 200 IM.
Well, and 200 breaststroke now.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. She's in that mix, I would say. And I think, you know, if she can just keep doing what she's doing, like she's like any swimmer, when she's in a happy place and she's working well, she swims fast. And she's been great. As I say, I've seen her most days at the centre working with Dave Hemmings, who's fantastic coach.
Amazing Dave. Job.
Yeah, he is. And You know, I've known Dave for, gosh, well over 10 years. I remember taking some of his kids to European Juniors back in the day, and he's always been really open with sharing, and we message all the time, literally, what do you think to this set, what do you think to that set, and some of the stuff that Abby's been doing in training is phenomenal. But credit to Dave, like he's got a really, really good relationship, and you can see that on deck with those pair in particular. They've got a really good understanding, and that's just been developed over the last, takes time to build a relationship, and they've come through the tough times, and that has built great trust and strength in their partnership. So I really hope she has an opportunity and she grabs it in the summer, definitely.
Mm.
Well, Jamie, it's been amazing speaking to you. Thank you so much for giving up your time to come onto the podcast. If you don't mind, we usually finish with some quick fire questions. We usually do this for the elite swimmers, but we have a coach's version as well that we gave to Russ Barber. So if you're happy to answer them, send them your way.
I'll be interested. I haven't seen Russ's, so I'll go back and watch that.
He's got some fun. We asked him some really deep questions for that podcast. We put him under pressure for most of it.
That was mainly Scott. Scott was on fire with those questions, but yeah. good one. It was a good one.
Russ is someone as well. Like, he's such a resource and, you know, a big name in British swimming. Mm. And I think he's always been really supportive of me since I first got into coaching. Had a lot of time with Russ personally as well. And you know, he's such a knowledge source for the sport. No, it's good.
Mm. Okay, so first question, what is your favourite stroke to coach?
Oof, interesting. I'd say breaststroke. Like, it's just so many, like, unique individual variants to the stroke, depending on the person, I guess. There's some fundamentals, obviously. But yeah, I'd say breaststroke.
Who's your swimming idol? Now, it could be a coach or a swimmer.
Oof, gosh. I'd say Becky Adlington. Just because I know her journey personally, and she's still, like, I hold her up as a benchmark in terms of a swimmer, and because I know what she did in training and stuff. Yeah, I'd hold Becky up there. She's real hero of mine, and I say I've known her since she was a little kid, so yeah, definitely.
She still very much is the face of British swimming right now, actually.
I feel really fortunate to call her a friend, and she's so, like, down to earth and grounded personally with me. Like, she's always been a big supporter. As I say, seeing her grow up and overcome some real challenges personally, and I think, again, someone who's got so much knowledge and experience in the sport, I think we could probably use her a bit more, really.
Mm. What's the hardest set you've ever given out?
Given out? Whoa.
Yeah.
Not one I've given out. One I took was, again, to Becky. She did 18 300s freestyle, short course, in a pool that was really hot, actually. Temperature was up. It was one hold, one descend. The hold ones were off, let me get this right, 3:45, and she'd hold probably 3:20 to 25s on those. And then descend one off 4 minutes, 1:09. Okay, and she descended short course to 3:02 from a push.
That's good.
That's not bad.
Probably not the toughest, but probably the most impressive thing I've seen in training. At and the way it was a privilege to take her through that session. I remember Bill talking to me about it in the morning. It's like, do you think she could do that? I was like, yeah, she could do it. It's just how fast she wanted to go at the end. And we were like, should we give her more rest? Should we not? So that was pretty impressive. That was impressive. Hardest set I've ever given. We've done the 100s and stuff like that.
A lot of the swimmers that we speak to, all of it is, I think one of them was like 800 IMs and stuff like that, that they all say is pretty hard as soon as the IMs get involved.
Yeah, like we've done stuff. We did stuff on a camp in 2019. We had a guy. I mean, he's an Olympic trials qualifier, and he's over 18, so he's a bit annoyed he can't get in. And he's really tough. Like, he did 5 1,000s, one fly, one back, one as a 4x250 IM, one breast, one free. That was pretty tough. But I said, like, we were all going to do 5 1,000s freestyle, and he asked to do it like that. But that's
1,000 fly. That's not nice.
Wow.
What a weird thing to say.
He's a tough guy. Like, he's really tough. He trains a lot with Mia, but he does it madly, and she does it freestyle. So, yeah. I've seen some impressive sets, like, over the years. Like, I remember a guy called Adam Faulkner who went to two Olympics, 2004. And I trained with him. We were good friends. I trained with him. And then when I started coaching, he was obviously still swimming. And he did 25 fours off five. I can't remember what it was. It was like you had to hold 20, descend the last five. And he held like something really like 410 short. And then the last five, he descended to 355. That's pretty good. Yeah,
it's good. It's
like, good, I think it's some good sets. Yeah. No, like, I could talk sets all day. Like, just, I mean,
we'll set up a later podcast and just do sets for an hour.
I've seen some impressive stuff. Like, I remember being at the holding camp in Edinburgh pre-London, seeing Michael James like run through some stuff, and Dave McNulty was like taking him and stuff. And I remember Michael was pushing back to back 30 points for breaststroke long course.
Blimey, not bad. How many times through? Jeez.
Like, he was doing, I remember Riley, he was doing like, it was, I'm sure it was like 450s, and these are off a minute. Like, they weren't off big rest. And then 100 easy. And I saw he did like three rounds, and everyone was a 30 point.
It's just classic broken 200s, really, isn't it?
But he was just like, and he goes 207. He gets beaten by the guy that breaks the world record. And you think, actually, I can understand why he does that, you know?
Yeah.
Impressive. Like, but yeah, anyway, your quick fire rounds just gone out the window.
Oh, no, not a problem. I'm amazed by some of these sessions. A final one. If you were to go on a road trip and you had three people in the car, they can be friends, family, or celebrities, who would you have in that car with you? Always a tough one.
I'm hoping my wife doesn't watch this podcast. gosh. Three people. Martin Luther King.
Okay.
One. Muhammad Ali. You're allowed to do people that aren't here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just anyone, basically. Yep, anyone.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh.
It's an inspirational car so far.
So far.
You need someone who's got a good musicality, so I'd probably go Paul McCartney, someone like that.
Nice. So that's a high-profile car, that one.
Yeah.
I think he'd have really good playlist, and I think all of them had great stories. So one from a political sort of civil rights angle, one from that and the sporting angle, and then I think a musician is always good. And if I could squeeze a fourth one in, I'd probably go like someone from Hollywood, I guess, but I'd have to think about that one. Maybe someone like a Will Smith. He's quite good. I follow him.
Okay.
He's charismatic, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Jamie, it has been fantastic speaking to you. I've learned a lot. Dan, have you learned a lot?
Oh, God, absolutely. I'm still in half shock of the sets we've just heard. But yeah. Honestly, it's been great. It has.
You see some of these guys like up close, and they are extremely impressive, like the higher level. I've been, fortunate that I swam in a great program under Bill, and then got the opportunity to coach there from such a young age, and made those connections with coaches and swimmers, and But I get just as excited taking our youngest group and seeing a kid be able to do something for the first time, or you know, teaching them something over a number of weeks and them hitting it, and you know, the excitement you can see in their face, and building relationship as well with the swimmer and the family, and like you just get just as big a buzz because it is about relationships. We're in a people business, aren't we? So
yeah, exactly,
definitely.
Yeah.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for coming on. Good luck to your swimmers for the rest of the season. And yeah, we'll stay in touch and hopefully speak to you again soon. It's been great having you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure. As hey, if you want me to come back again in the future, more than happy to do a whole thing on training sets.
Definitely.
Much just terrifying. Yeah.
Thank you for your time, lads. And
all
the best with the podcast. Yeah.
Cheers, Jamie. Yeah. That just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you haven't subscribed to us already, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify, or any other podcast provider that you use. I've been Scott, he's been Dan, and we will see you in 7 days.
And we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.